righty, folks, it's 7 o'clock, so let's call to order the regular meeting and special public hearing of the North Bend Planning Commission for Thursday, November 12, 2015. First item of business is the approval of the minutes for the October 22, 2015 meeting. Do I have a motion?
So, second that.
So, motion and a second by Dick. Any comments, changes, or questions? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the minutes are approved. Next item on the agenda is public comment on non-agenda items. So if there's anyone from the public who wishes to address the Planning Commission on something other than what is on our agenda tonight, now is your opportunity to speak. Is there anybody who wishes to speak to the Planning Commission?
Okay. This has nothing to do with this stuff.
Correct. All right. Okay, item number 4, introduction and public hearing of the Tanner Junction Master Plan Overlay District Amendment. Just for everybody in the audience, we'll start with a staff introduction of the item, and then we'll move to open the public hearing. Before we begin, I'd like to just ask the commission, because we're talking about specific lots, does anyone here have any financial or personal interest in the affected property or issue? And if you do, speak now. If you don't, we can just move on. Okay. So no one here has an interest in any of these properties. So with that, staff, could you give us a brief introduction for this change?
Sure. I'll go through, and there's a number of materials in the packet. I can go through those briefly, just kind of summarize where we're at. And then the applicant is also here as well, and they might wish to maybe add anything after me, or may be able to answer questions if you have any. So the items in the packet are a staff report, a map of the proposed overlay, and an aerial, and I have those two maps in a large format if people want to pass them around or look at those. The draft code language that we would be, which is where the change would lie, is in a section of the code. And we have one citizen comment letter we've received, and looks like we might have some folks here that want to comment. So. An overlay district, we have a number of them throughout the city. You can see on our zoning map, we have a East North Bend and a Tanner Landing overlay. What it does is it doesn't change the underlying zoning or the land use designation. It allows specific uses, and we have criteria in our code to help define what those are, what setbacks might be, what it might look like, what access points it might have, without knowing what the exact development is going to be. In this case, the applicant has a project in mind, and they want to develop multifamily housing. The zone is EP1, and it currently would not allow solely multifamily. In EP1, you can do upper story, and it's mostly a light industrial zoning. So the three properties totaling almost 6 acres are 1, 2, 3 at the corner of 436th and Southeast 136th. And this, we're proposing it be an extension of this Tanner Junction master plan overlay. What this one did was allow high density residential on about half. This is about 30 acres, and we allowed about half of that to be residential. No project has been proposed on that. For context, we have, you know, existing single family residential here. This is low density zoning here. This area is currently outside of the city limits right now. So you're near the intersection where Southeast Cedar Falls Ways comes in. There's a church here. This piece just to the north is where Chinook Lumber is looking to relocate. And then this is a neighborhood business zone on the corner here, with a mix of things going on. We actually have it's not a formal application yet, but there's some 19, I think it is, single-family homes proposing to go in here, and some apartments right here off of Tanner Road. So, in general, when I drive through the area, it feels residential to me. These homes are definitely, you know, they've been there a while. They're on a little bit larger lots. And so that's the context for the amendments. So the map that's in your packet and then is on the 1117. Oops. Just shows that overlay extending, and we are proposing that the access point, that there only be one off of Southeast 136, and that it would line up to create a safe intersection there with 437. Based on a traffic study that the applicant would have to do, we might allow like a right only out. And again, you know, they would have to study this intersection, the impacts that their development would propose. And they're looking at, they've asked for, the other variation they've asked for is to allow 12 units per building rather than 10. And they have some reasons for why, you know, they think that works better for them. What we've proposed is that along Southeast 136th, that not be the case. And they're actually, from the very conceptual plan that they've put together, they're showing six units building along that frontage. And so, let's see, what else? Is there anything else that we'd want to point out?
You said along 136th?
Right. So overall, so on page 3 of the staff report, we've talked about, you know, EP's zones, that we've had some overlays come in, that, you know, we want to have employment generating lands too, that's important. We've also talked about how there's a need for some multifamily and a need for diversity of housing and a need for people to be able to afford to that work here to be able to live here. So based on some calculations, the numbers might have changed slightly. We're refining the final land use element in our comprehensive plan, but we have approximately 335 acres of EP1 zone lands in the city. That's about 11% of our total land area is EP1. And this would take out, like I said, almost 6 acres, so 0.01% of that total EP1. That's just to give you some context of the area. And then as far as the changes in the code, that's at the end of the packet. It shows up in the 1810.025, the special districts. We, like I said, have proposed to add on to that Tanner Junction. One of the key criteria we feel is important is preserving significant trees, existing significant trees, especially along 136th and 436th. We already have language in our code that supports that. And we would propose that typically the applicant, if they can replace and show that there's a reason why, that they can remove down to 10%, but we're proposing that they need to retain 20% minimum. They'd still have to replant and follow all the other criteria. But again, the focus areas for retaining would be along 436 and 136. And other than that, I'll just, I guess, open it up to questions or however you want to do it.
Before we open up the public hearing, I just want to ask, for the commission's sake, can you tell us how this got put on our agenda? I don't know if it's like a docket request or a municipal code or why is it here now?
So this is a property owner driven, and it's called an outside initiated docket. So we have our docket request open right now for next year. And we do that every year, and anybody can fill out a docket and be put on the list. Then the Planning Commission looks through it and says, you know, which do we want to take up in the following year, and they might say this one, but not this one. If you are outside initiated, you pay a fee, and they wanted to move their review along faster. So it ensures that, that at least gets brought to this point, and we go from there. So the steps would be public hearing tonight. If the Planning Commission is ready to make a decision tonight, that's fine. After the Planning Commission makes a decision, then it goes to City Council. So.
Okay.
And they submitted this to the city like 2 months ago.
Right. Yeah. So just with our workload and staffing and everything, and then getting the notices out, so we had a notice of application on the site, and then we had a SEPA and a hearing notice. And needed some time to kind of come up with our recommendation and think about it. But the owners of the property have owned the property for a long time, and they feel this is the best fit. And they have a project in mind. And I think if it's approved, that they would bring that in early next year. Is my understanding. So
I have two quick questions. How come this wasn't, maybe you can recall, included in the original or in the other overlay for that area? Question one. Question two, when the other overlay came through this body, what sort of reaction did you get from the public on that?
Mm-hmm. Well, that one was also, that's owned by Crown Lakes, I think they're called, and LLC, and they brought that as their outside initiated request for their parcels.
Similar process,
but it was, you know, their concern was their parcels, and we just focused on what their
Is there any consideration at that time to extend it?
No.
And sometimes these things come through and
right.
You have to consider a little wide scale.
No, and we noticed those properties all around, and so these folks did not come forward at that time. I think they were aware of it, so maybe that gave them the idea, well, hey, maybe we should try that. We have met with that property owner and her, the daughter of the owners, and nothing serious has come about yet for an application. That one was, it still backs to the 136th, mm-hmm. So that's a similarity. We did have different factors with it fronting North Bend Way, it having the King County Trail go through it, and the Tanner Road. One thing, you know, was that if it were to develop EP1 light industrial, you could have loading docks and things going on, light industrial uses. And so it was a way to buffer those impacts, to have some residential then transition to light industrial along North Bend Way. But I think, you know, either way, when there's development, you're going to have traffic concerns and noise and light and, you know, more people on the area versus it sitting vacant. So that's a concern.
Can you just real quick tell me about the right turn only restriction?
Yeah.
You mentioned?
Again, that's just, it's based on just traffic, a traffic study. If there was a need for fire to be able to have a way in and out. But trying on the larger streets, trying to limit all these conflicting turns, left, right, you know, multiple accesses. That's the intent.
That's from the interior of the lot.
Right.
Not coming out of 136, right?
No. So it'd be like
the site would basically be access like, off 136.
Yeah. Turning onto 430, and then you could take a left onto Cedar Falls Way.
Okay, so if I came out 136, I could only turn right onto 430.
No, if you came out 136, you could go either way. We were saying if there was another access point up near maybe the Chinook Lumber site, that you could just take a right out of there and hit Cedar Falls Way. Again, if the traffic study shows there needs to be more. Mm-hmm.
Then it's basically the reason for that is to restrict the amount of left-hand turn
across traffic. Yeah.
The conflict of the left-hand turn, so it's
keeping
all of that movement to the intersection.
Yeah.
But we wouldn't necessarily potentially be opposed to a right only. But that's all. Kind of
and there might be neither. I mean, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Concerned about the impact of a three-story complex across the street from a single-story complex.
Excuse me. That's more specific to the actual item, and before we discuss it, I'm going to let the public have their say, so if you can hold that.
So, I like that item.
So, at this point, I hope everybody who wants to speak has signed in. If not, there's another sign-in sheet over there. But if you want to speak, you want to state your full name and your address for the record. You will be timed for 3 minutes. Okay, so the first one.
Did we open the hearing?
Not yet.
Okay, sorry.
Thank you. So it's 17 after, 16 after? So go ahead and officially open the public hearing for the Tanner Junction Master Plan Overlay District. The first name I have on the list is Joanne Kelly.
Okay, so 3 minutes, I'm going to ask questions.
Okay.
Who's responsible for maintaining 136th Street? Is that the county or is that the city? Because that's right the boundary. If you're going to have 130 potential households all exiting onto 136th, you've got one block where they would be entering in 436. That's a lot of cars, because right now that is the only entrance and exit from Alpine Estates. Who's going to patrol? Is that going to be Snoqualmie Police? It's still going to be King County? That road really is not very big. It's not very wide. And so I saw something that talked about off-street, on-street parking. Mm-hmm. You can't, how are they going to do that? There's no shoulders. I didn't see anything in the docket that talked about the Elm or the Monument Street there. What are they? Have they talked with the game department yet, or? Because the last time I spoke to you, they haven't been consulted. School district. I know Opstead is full. So is there an impact cost to the builder? You know, I'm in 130. You know, some of them are going to have kids. Plus you have John Day building 30 homes down Cedar Falls. That traffic's going to come to 436. Traffic from here is going to go to 436. And it is going to have a huge impact on the traffic. And it seemed as though that they didn't think there would be. So those are my questions. Oh, and the three stories, yeah. Does firefighting have a truck that would handle a ladder truck that handles three stories? I don't think we have any three stories here, do we? In town.
Do we have one?
But the other impact, and you kind of broached that a bit about leaving significant trees and such, because the people that are closer to 436, this building is going to have a huge impact. You know, it's going to be right there. So it's really going to change the character of our department. So it's a real concern. And I thought it was a new owner. I thought somebody bought that property. It wasn't. This isn't the same people that have owned it from before.
Okay. Well, thank you. I don't know if you want to take some of those questions, but...
What we could do is hear everybody out and then go through questions all at the end, maybe.
Okay. All right, the next person I have on the list, I'm sorry, it's not clear, is it Tauncey?
Trudy.
Good. Sorry.
Joe's pretty much said okay. All that I'm really concerned about the traffic. We've lived there for 26 years now. And it's such a nice little neighborhood. And to see development happen there is sad. Just was sad. Because we had, across the street from us, there was all woods, and now it's all taken out with a chain link fence. I mean, sure, I can see an outside, But eventually I heard that they're going to be building over there too, across the street from us. And it's just not, I mean, I've been here, like I said, 26 years. And I say, no. And they see all that traffic. It's hard getting out of onto 436 as it is when we leave the neighborhood. So that's all I have to say.
And I'm sorry, could you give your full name and address?
Yes, it's Trudy, T-R-U-D-Y, Teakles, T-E-A-K-L-E-S. My address is 43817 Southeast 136th Street.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Mr. McFarland, do you wish to speak to this, or?
Mr. Chair, I've only got a few general comments. I'd be happy to defer to those more immediately impacted.
Okay. I only have one other. Wayne?
Hi. Wayne Clark. I live on 136th Street. And it's my understanding that I live in King County and that property at one time was zoned by King County. Is that true? Does anyone know? Until it was annexed by North Bend, and now North Bend has control of the zoning. Is that correct?
Of the parcel at hand, yes.
Yeah, if it's in our urban growth boundary, though, the Planning Commission would have planned, if it was to be annexed in the city, it's zoning, though.
I see. I have a lot of questions. The primary one is, how are we going to put 132 units onto what I surmise is approximately 5 acres adjacent to a lot of residential areas that have, you know, anywhere from a quarter to a half acre to a full acre in some cases. And so we're going to squeeze 130 apartment buildings into this small space. All I can see is problems. I see a lot of traffic. I live on the corner, and it was my understanding that there was no egress. And I don't know what the antonym is for egress.
Ingress.
Along 136th Street. But it looks like the plan is to have some egress and ingress along 136th Street. It's very troubling indeed. Mm-hmm. I would like to know why the Planning Commission picked this particular segment to plant a high-rise apartment building in. And when I say high-rise, I mean it's more than one story high. I just don't see the logic from what I read about the city of North Bend and controlling growth. It's completely different from what I read about North Bend when I look at the council city meeting, the meeting, the minutes, and so on and so forth, you know, over the last couple of years. This is really, really, really disturbing.
Yeah.
I came out here in 1990, because it was a rural environment, and I've been very happy. And now this is going to turn my life upside down. So I'm quite disturbed. That's all I have.
I agree with you.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. McFarland.
Thank you. Rob McFarland, 42621 Southeast 134th Place. I guess my comments are a little broader. I didn't hear within what was said, does staff support the request?
Yes, with the conditions in the code that we've outlined.
Okay. And that included support for the 12 units per building?
Right, as long as they're not fronting.
Would staff then be supporting that number of units across all of the HDR zoning? It would be my question for the commission to consider. If it's good for this one area, is that not an appropriate allowable size for all HDR? I guess one of the things I'd ask the commission to consider is if the overlay is favorable, does that maybe point towards an outright rezone instead of an overlay, balancing the qualities of an overlay versus versus just rezoning. And then my only broader comment is that while I'm concerned for the loss of additional commercial space, perhaps this will help balance out the significant reduction in downzoning to our remaining LDR space that's being led by council. So perhaps we'll see some balance in there.
Can you say that last part again, few sentences? I didn't get all of the last part of what you said.
In my overall comment, I was just saying what I'm thinking is if this is a good thing to add some more opportunity for high-density residential, I'm a little concerned with the loss of additional commercial space. We've got such a limited amount. But it may have benefit in helping to balance out what I see as downzoning existing in our low-density residential.
Thank you.
That's all.
Thank you, Mr. McFarland. Is there anyone else from the public who wishes to speak?
Please state your name. I'm the owner. I didn't know if I'd need to sign in.
If you could just state your name and address.
Yeah, I'm Robert Hibbs, 3301 Montebello Parkway, Bothell, Washington. I'm the owner of the property. I've owned it since 1978.
So you sold?
No. So the Chinook piece was part of the original, and that may be what you're thinking. Okay, that was probably the Chinook piece that we had owned since 79.
Oh.
So, yeah, we've had this since 1978. We've looked at putting some big distribution warehouses on it, which would certainly have impact with big trucks. We like this better. The height limit is according to what's the zoning as it is now. The change from 10 units to 12 units just allows us to stack them better. It doesn't change the height of the buildings, but if you take a three-story building and divide, 10 by 3, it doesn't work very well. It's 10 by 12, so we can have more open space between the buildings. And the number of units that we're talking about is within the high-density residential current zone. We're not asking for any changes on that. Traffic seems to be a big issue, and what I thought I've got, this again is preliminary, and I don't know where to go to show this home. Over against this window, I'll hold it up, and I can kind of talk about it. This is 436. There you go. 436th over here, 136th over here. This is Chinook Lumber here. And what we're talking about is a circulation pattern to try to have more ingress here, but more egress over here, so that it's not all forced on 136th. Can you see that? And these units that we're talking about putting in here, we're trying to make them townhouse-type units that aren't just a blank front, but will be at different levels, so it looks like it's a residence, like a residential neighborhood. And when we talked about some parking, we would expand on this roadway a little bit and have the ability for people to park out front and make it feel just like a community. These buildings back here are the 12-unit buildings instead, but this along here would be all townhome-type units. Put in a community or club house and swimming pool and everything for the people here, and then parking around here up against Chinook Lumber.
Excuse me, Mr. Hedley, could you tell me what the setback is from 136 from the building?
The roadway, I was out there measuring it today, it appears to be about 12 feet from our property line. So there's 12 feet of city-owned property, and this is a guess, about between our property line and the edge of the roadway. Mm-hmm. And then the setbacks from there would be from our property line. I think we have a minimum of 15 feet, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And we've had discussions because there are some beautiful trees in here and we've started to take a survey of these trees that we'll move these around to try to accommodate keeping a lot of those big trees along there. And then having a walkway along here that might go through the trees. Again, I'm talking about stuff I don't understand until we know. And we overlay the trees on this and try to figure out how to get the particular units in raised building with the trees. So.
So that right there is a roadway into the off 136.
Right, and it's just across from this other. This what is that? 437. So this would be one intersection as opposed to having multiple entryways or exits from there. Just have one, and it would be at this intersection, so it's defined. And then the thought is that most people come out and they go out this direction.
So if they went out, so they'd be going on to Tanner?
On 436. Right here.
Oh.
436.
Okay.
Yeah, here's the lumber yard.
Yeah.
Tanner being up here.
Can I add?
Yeah.
I'm Holly Eastwood. I work with Bob. I'm the project manager for the project. I guess to address some of the concerns that I could hear, the overlay request is for high-density residential. It's already zoned for industrial, office park. So if the concern is getting disturbing the vacant land that is in its beauty, you could have an industrial park put on it without any hearing, without any, you know, anybody's comments being available. But
I don't think that makes us feel a whole lot better.
I appreciate
that.
It's nice to have this as your backyard.
This would be more pleasant and beautifying than.
And Chinook Lumber is going to have the same height of buildings here as we're going to have here. This area over here has been entitled for most of it for HDR, high density. So it has the same zoning as we have here, except this is it 30 acres, and we're fine. Mm-hmm. So the other thing we're trying to do is right in this corner, try to keep a lot of the significant trees and have, because this is sort of a view window coming off the freeway, and we want to make this just a park area as best we can and preserve and have some walkways through for people to access on a pedestrian basis and on the corner.
I'm just concerned the amount of people and cars.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be triple, quadruple what there is now.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hibbs. I really appreciate that. So is there anyone else from the public who wants to speak that hasn't had a chance to speak? All right.
Just ask one question.
Then we'll go ahead and close the public hearing at 8.
One more question there.
35.
Could I just ask a question?
Uh-huh.
The North Bend, where's considered King County?
We'll get to that when we go through your questions. I think you asked that. In the realm of who's maintaining and where.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We can get.
So.
Go ahead. Okay. So. So 136,
yeah.
So the
first question was around maintenance of
the right. So here's the city limits line. Actually, and all these folks are.
And it's also a red line on the map. In
currently
that, right?
Not annexed, right? So 136 would be frontage improvements if there needed to be right-of-way dedication would be made by the applicant. They would provide that. And it would be maintained and dedicated to the city of North Bend. Police would also be the Snoqualmie North Bend Police.
Jamie.
Yes.
So as we grow as a city, when we just recently did our comprehensive plan amendments and we talked about our land use and how much the city can grow in our population, this would also be a growth in our population. At some point, doesn't the police department look at our population and decide to increase or decrease staff as we change?
Right, and we have a number of impact fees. We don't have per se a police impact fee. The city pays for the police budget out of the general fund, but
it's through a contract that's renewed, and I'm not sure if it's annually or biannually, but it's reviewed quite often in the realm of, and that's part of the council's purview to determine level of service. Mm-hmm.
And is it true what I was told through Snoqualmie Police that they have a partnership with King County Sheriffs and mm-hmm. they do joint backups?
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
There was a comment brought up about elk corridors. There are a number of informal and more formal designated corridors throughout the city. In general, we have trail corridors or wildlife corridors that we have set in certain areas. We haven't identified one through this exact parcel. It's something that would be further evaluated with the application when it came in. And even by providing the corridors like we try and do, doesn't mean that the elk are going to go down that corridor. They still might go down the street or in your backyard. Opsted impact fees, we collect impact fees on behalf of the school, and it goes straight to the school. Currently, it's
the school district.
The school district, yeah. It's over $8,000 for a single family. And we just passed for next year, I think it was around $1,600 per single family, for multifamily. So per unit, they pay a school impact fee, which helps the school fund their district. Traffic on Cedar, on all of the roads, like we said, would be evaluated. And if the traffic engineers and our traffic engineers were to feel justified, then there would have to be mitigation provided by the applicant.
Now, when those surveys are taken, they're not just taking from this moment in time. They're assuming the new development that's already happening and stuff.
They assume PM peak hour too, when it's the busiest time of the road. So they would take traffic counts.
They take pipeline plus project, so they don't forecast out. But it's based on the level of service of failing intersections or non-failing intersections. So if your level of service, when you study an intersection, if it drops below what the engineer's world is a level of service D, improvements to that intersection is required, and the development cannot move forward unless that happens. All of that happens when you have a project proposed. The interesting thing to keep in mind tonight is we're actually looking at this site not based on any project that's necessarily been proposed or potentially proposed. It's based on if they chose to sell, what would we want to see from a zoning basic regulation minimum standards there in this area. So keep that in mind too. Because until there's a proposal in place, all those details don't necessarily get triggered.
Mm-hmm. So let me echo that back. Mm-hmm. So if they decide not to do anything, they would sell it with the new overlay. Somebody else could come in with different plans, different schematics.
Different plans, but they would have to make the basic overlays. Yeah.
Okay, could they do the light industrial?
Yes.
Then they could do the high density residential?
Yeah. It runs with the land.
Right. Mm-hmm. Literally.
Yeah.
Rob brought up the 12 units throughout the HDR. We did think about that. This is specific to this overlay, but that would be something that we could look at.
Since we were responding to this proposal, if we chose to go forth in that direction, it would be something that would be docketed for the general land use chapter that addresses that issue, and that would be a subsequent update.
Which is how far out?
It could be coming through at any time. Mm-hmm. It's just since that would be a much bigger public involvement process because it would affect citywide versus responding to a request. Mm-hmm. I can speak to a couple things with regard to compatibility. You know, I heard a lot from the homeowners about the concern of, I think most of your homes are one-story homes on 136. And we thought that through. And even though right now your homes are in King County, and I'm not certain, but I would guess that you have about a 35-foot height limit for a single-family home. That's typical single-family, two-story home. This project would have to meet that same height limit. We don't have a a variance in any of these provisions that would allow them to go taller than the average single-family home, which is also our height limitation at 35 feet. So that's kind of one thing to keep in mind. Another thing that we thought about with the compatibility, as you know, the zoning right now is industrial, and that allows a number of somewhat intense uses that aren't usually compatible to residential. In a lot of places where we have zoning like that, we have some buffering in place. An example is, it's not exactly, but along 140th, where we have some industrial zoning, we do have a 40-foot buffer. It is the EP2, but the uses are pretty similar in the, between the two zones. So that, and that's a, you know, that's a judgment call as to whether warehousing is less of an impact or more of an impact to live next to, but this, we did, one of the provisions we considered when we created the overlay a couple years ago now, was actually in an effort to help mitigate 136, the homes, your homes, from the potential heavy industrial, the trucks that arrive in this zone. You could have warehousing, and it could be, it's not, you know, there's limitations somewhat, but it could be a full warehouse. There isn't something, anything restricting that. So there was a perspective of potentially living, having residents face residents is actually more compatible than warehouse facing single family residents. So that's one consideration that we thought about from that perspective. And then just to speak to Rob's point on why not make this a rezone versus an overlay. This question's come up a few times in our past and the Planning Commission. But the reason behind overlays is because not every a city's one zone affects citywide, and overlays are allowed to dial in on specific issues within an area. So you can use an overlay to create additional provisions that maybe that same zone somewhere else in the city does not have to worry about. Sometimes it's, you know, trail crossings or truck stops or what have you. So that's why we have implemented the overlay approach on in select areas to allow that dialed in perspective on an area. From a zoning
standpoint. Thank you, staff, for going through all the questions. I really appreciate that. So, Planning Commission, if you guys want to start in, Dick, you want to go first?
I don't think the North Exit Y-Turnel is going to work. I'll respect you about it. It doesn't work in this town already. We get left-handers out of the post office parking lot by the hour. It's a right turn only, but they turn left into the main traffic.
But they just put their hands out.
Okay, yeah. So it's not going to work. I mean, the people who are going to live in your building are the people who are going to be moving westward into where their jobs are. They're not going to be going right to nowhere. So they're going to be breaking that rule. So it's not going to work as you expect it to. It'd be good if you could, but it won't. I'm not concerned about the fact that that nice timber stand's going to come down. It was destined to come down anyway. I'm a former forest, but I know about trees. And so it's a good stand. I do worry about the strip of trees you would leave in front of the property for landscaping purposes. We all know that when you thin out an attack stand, those leading trees get wind blow pretty bad. That's where the wind comes from. South to north. So those trees had better be wind firm or they're going to be a problem for the city and for your buildings. I don't understand the 35-foot limit is going to work for a three-story building, Jen. I don't, the math doesn't work for me. It doesn't seem to be
well, friendly. the proposal, I'll make it clear, I'm not reviewing a proposal.
Yeah.
We're creating zoning, and they have to meet 35 feet. If they can't do it, then it's a two-story building.
So but even the discussion of the three-story, it doesn't even make sense that we can be in the dialogue.
No, we don't really address it because it's spoken dimensional.
Yeah.
It's in somewhere in this packet, but I frankly think the idea about three stories in the interior will lessen my concern about three stories right on the street. That would be
right here.
And because of behind the trees, that might soften the look, but it still suggests you got this 3 foot or this 3 story structure series of in the neighborhood, which could be interesting, and the architecture would have a lot to do with that. But I know from my experience is that we're going to be talking signal intersections here in a matter of 5 years. It's not going to work. But all that's going to happen on the east end of the town, that the turn off of North Bend went on to 436 cannot continue without signals. And as you work your way down the freeway, you know, the same thing with Cedar Falls Road, traffic is coming to the intersection, they're barely stopping as it is. Is the ramp we're going to have to start talking signalized control, or at least stop signs. And I read the impact statement. They said right now we don't feel there's enough to be worried about signalization. I think that's wrong. I don't think that's possibly credible either. At some point we're talking signals, so we better start collecting impact fees for that kind of use. Just can't escape that. But I do like the positive side of this proposal is I think the aesthetics are less impactful as I thought. I visualized buildings right off to the street level. I don't see that. But I do feel concerned about what Bob was saying. There's a 3 stories here, why not 3 stories around the neighborhood throughout the community, and that might not be a bad idea either, frankly. But we have 2-story limits now, so we
yeah. Well, it's not limited to 2 stories.
I think in Park Street, there's 3-story townhomes on Park Street.
It's how you build, you can build a third into the roof line, but the main thing is that height is 35-foot limit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you must be talking about subterranean stories, something underground. Okay. Beat my dead horse here, I can see that. But all in all,
so, thank you. Correct me if I'm wrong, I know you talked about the intersection of 436 and North Bend Way. In the current transportation plan, is that to be developed as a roundabout, if I'm correct?
That is not
the end of Cedar Falls Way, or?
No, whatever exit 32 is.
Oh.
Is that 436?
436.
Yeah, and North Bend Way. Mm. I thought that's in our transportation plan as a roundabout.
Yeah, I thought it was.
Problem intersection.
There is not a roundabout in the transportation plan there.
That was
for.
It's the last one I found side road in the current plan. There is one more.
There's Downing Park.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what Ron told me.
Some documentation, I've seen both of them, the Mount Si one and 436 and Brooklyn Way. You guys will probably remember them.
So, what I'm just
alluding
to.
There's 140th.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm pretty sure that this is there. And so, if we're going into the transportation analysis and they figure that, then that's where some kind of improvement where.
Right.
I believe our city's current preferred method is roundabouts over lights, right?
It depends on the intersection, really. But in either case, the applicant would pay their fair share for that mitigation and portion of the project.
Who would like to go next? Anybody? Ms. Smith?
I guess I'm trying to focus specifically on the parcel, but I can't get away mentally from issues with traffic on that road already that we're seeing because of the additional development that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I think this goes to the gateway plan that I think we were intending to discuss. That's going to against one of those major gateways as you come into town. Mm-hmm. And this change, I mean, it kind of changes the what you're going to see. You don't have a plan in place. Mm-hmm. I guess that's part of my concern, too. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily opposed to the idea, because honestly, if it were my house, I would rather have some townhomes across the street instead of a warehouse. But that's a personal opinion. I guess my problem right now is that I can't get past issues with that road already that we know about. And I hear about it a lot, by the way. I take the phone calls. So I can't get away from knowing what happens in those areas. And I can't imagine trying to make a left-hand turn to get to I-90. That creates a situation where we're going to be routing more traffic through downtown for people to get to the freeways to avoid making a left-hand turn on a congested road.
So I'll kind of jump in. Both those comments are great. The gateway aspects. This is another good reason for overlays. This is a gateway piece of property. There are those trees at the front of the parcel that the applicant talked about wanting to retain. This is where you could have a discussion that if you wanted some provisions that kind of provided the gateway feeling that was envisioned, even though we haven't been able to work on that project, it's a 2016 project, this is where you could put some provisions, so whether they develop it or somebody else or even an industrial comes in, it's in the code that's part of what you want to see at the gateway. So that's kind of one benefit of what we're doing here, is that discussion can happen. Traffic, just remember, whether this project was here for your review in the realm of a residential project or an industrial project came into our office mm-hmm. under the current zoning, that would initiate traffic analysis. And so no matter what happens, shy of nothing, we're going to have a traffic impact of some sort. And the transportation plan that you have in your comprehensive plan and then the traffic impact fees and everything are intended to be set up to mitigate that impact. There is a thing called concurrency, and cities aren't allowed to approve development unless concurrency could be met, and that's all part of that. Traffic is one of those things. So, for example, failing intersections and such. So that all gets reviewed, and then regardless of the proposal, conditions are placed on it to be met at construction. So you're right. There will be traffic. There would be traffic if it was a different proposal, too, and we'd have to initiate that traffic analysis at that point.
So just to clarify and make sure that I misunderstand clearly different things, we would be able to include language with regard to protecting a gateway into the city.
Right.
And then the overlay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's a very specific language.
But would that
and
have
that
to be,
would apply regardless.
Would that language have to be in there now?
Yeah, you because, would want to include it.
Because I'm exactly where you are. I mean, I have these ideas in my head about the gateway. We have traffic problems as it is that we can't really solve already. I agree that this right-hand turn thing is, who would want to honor that? The roundabout, if it goes in, would be something similar to what I'm assuming is up at the casino, because it's a three-way. But I don't know what language to put in there, into the overlay, that would preserve the gateway, because I don't have the gateway sorted out.
Okay, so if Jamie just pointed us to go to page 3 of the overlay language where it talks about tree preservation. And this is just to initiate the conversation here. You'll see where it talks about the first sentence where it talks about existing tree preservation shall be a priority in this overlay adjacent to 436 and 136 to enhance the gateway entrance to the city from exit 32. That's where if you want to say something, if there's more that you're envisioning, this is the place to have that discussion.
Because it would apply regardless of the type of
it. Well, no matter who bills on this, they will have to meet these provisions.
Mm-hmm. I'm not coming up with anything. I'm going, yeah. Okay. You want to think about it for a second?
Gateway amenities would obviously be trails and bikeways. Mm-hmm. That would be a part of this.
Right. And that's further discussed on the page before. It starts on page one with the site circulation, frontage, and trails.
Yeah, page two.
Yeah, page two or three at the top. And that's where we talked about meandering the sidewalk around the significant trees, allowing flexible building setbacks in the front yards. If it means that we can save trees, we allow them to set the buildings back further than typically you would. And the first point there gets to traffic.
Well, I'm talking about bikeways in the road. You know, we're talking about recreational through traffic.
Right.
That's actually covered in your transportation plan. So Gateway is more, so for example, if it's an arterial, bike lanes are slated, and your code provides that. They're going to have to build those if that's part of their frontage improvements. Mm-hmm. Gateway would be more of, like for example, we have in our downtown master plan a graduated gateway from South Fork Road into town, and what it calls for is a different treatment of a higher level of treatment. So we have the lighting is further apart on the south side of the freeway, and then as it gets closer to town, it starts getting closer to kind of provide a sense of arrival. Same with the trees. There could be like we have our Welcome to North Bend signs at the gateways of areas. A lot of times gateways, basically the intent is to create a place, a sense of arrival.
Welcoming.
So that would be the question is, and the reality is we're talking about one corner of a gateway intersection. And when we discussed this internally, we felt that if there was a high priority of tree preservation on that corner, that actually provided, in our minds, some of the best gateway to North Bend is, instead of driving in and seeing nothing but development, homes, you drive in and you see a stand of trees. And to us, that was, that's a pretty good gateway to what we feel is a big part of North Bend. But that's where you guys, if there's more or missed it, that's what we can...
Well, that's where I'm torn. Like, because the gateway piece, I want to have a firmer vision on it, but I also don't want to hodgepodge it, right? Mm-hmm. Start overlaying here, start doing something special there, and then next thing you know, when we finally get together to have a vision, we have to then accommodate our vision with these things that we've just approved along the way. So that's kind of thing one. Thing two, it's just more people in an area that is already problematic to me. But the flip side of that, and this is where I'm torn, is we need more affordable housing in our community. And this particular location is great for the freeway. It makes sense in a lot of regard, especially with our trails. And we had talked about this before with having mixed commercial and residential. I think it was one of your suggestions with the upstairs being residential. But there is access, non-motor vehicle access into North Bend. So I'm really torn on those two particular pieces. So I don't know if I can personally say yes or no tonight, to be quite honest, because I have to wrestle with this, but I want more dialogue on it because I think it's important, and we're going to start facing more of this, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just my two cents.
So one of the things I haven't heard anybody discuss on the commission is that we've moved from 21 acres of industrial, and if we take another 5.93 away, we're going down to 14 of EP1 zoned in our city. And when you talk about bringing companies here so that you can work and live in your community, do we have enough available land? And if we don't, where are the best spots for EP1 to exist in our city? And should it be in a place that is not in the heart of downtown, and should it be how close to the freeway? And so in balancing our need for industrial areas and job opportunities for our residents, how are we going to also ensure that we meet those needs?
That's an excellent point, and I can see one element being there's a lot of industrial area already available down that corridor, and those workers are going to need places to live, right? But the flip side of it is, yes, if we're going to become an investor-friendly city, we need to have more of these spaces available that are have that do have quick access on and off the freeway.
So I guess, in my opinion, the flexibility of the overlay where they can do either or on that lot works. So we go back to the importance of being a gateway and how it should look and feel when you exit off. Mm-hmm. Because whether you're going to have industrial or high-density residential, mm-hmm. we're going to account for that.
Industrial wants a welcoming, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, talking about a welcoming, a gateway, an industrial park is a welcoming environment for industrialists. They want to know that we're industry-friendly. Mm-hmm. And we keep chipping away at the industrial land base, we're going to have the opposite reputation. We're not going to have an industrial welcome.
So there's two things that I'm hearing. One, we don't have the vision for the gateway set. Two, I think we all have somewhat of an agreement that we need to become more of an investor-friendly city, which means more industrial area, but we don't have a plan for that either. So, you know, these are two big ticket issues that, I don't know, I think they need more discussion.
So, just another tidbit. On page 3, we talk about our capital impacts, and this is on the staff report, I would say. And so no capital improvements are required. And I'm just wondering the difference between EP1 and high-density residential. I thought there was some kind of difference in demand, and I'm not sure what it was, but... has this been something that Public Works gave you? Page 3 of the staff report, it's right above impacts of proposed amendments.
Right, so this is just getting at for the overlay to be approved. It's a code amendment at this point. There's no capital impact. When the development comes through and it's multifamily or it's a combination or it's industrial, then we evaluate and address the capital impact at that point.
Okay. So it's not like
the wait,
because there's not a no.
Right.
You're basically doing a zoning exercise tonight.
Right.
Even though you have a applicant that has an idea, you're doing a zoning exercise. And then once there's a submittal, that triggers all this traffic analysis, which allows us to get to figuring out what traffic improvements are necessary based on our envisioned comp plan improvements.
Yeah, I mean, in the flip side of that, with new development coming in, that will be money toward the new traffic, so the problems mm-hmm. that were already existing, we're seeing down there, may start being remedied. What's the acreage again on the existing overlay?
It's 30.
It's 30 acres?
Mm-hmm. About 15 of that, we said, could be HDR. The other 15 that is adjacent to North Bend Way remained EP1.
So it was one of the original visions that... I know it sounded like that property owner or those property owners came in specifically for that overlay, but was a vision discussed that, okay, we'll keep the light industrial EP zoning along the busy streets because those streets are going to just continuing to get busier and busier, right? Mm-hmm. But then the residential piece, the overlay, would make sense tucked away off the busier side of the road, which is where it's at now. Was there any discussion about...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Jenna exactly kind of got out with the transition of uses.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, there was, when that original one came in, there was, we did look broader than just the parcels.
Sure.
Just like we did this time.
Mm-hmm.
But we actually, at that time, all those parcels actually accessed off North Bend Way. And we even put a provision on the back of those parcels, I thought, if you remember, Jamie, there's a transitional landscape.
I think it's a 30-foot buffer.
Oh, wait, not for the residential. Hold on, we better confirm that before we...
And that loading docks could not face 136.
30-foot type 1 landscape buffer
right.
along 136.
Right.
Yeah, so in our mind at that point, if it was going to be the industrial, again, the overlay allowed us to provide this neighborhood a buffer from the industrial.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you could do that with this. If it's going to be industrial, you do the buffering. If it's going to be more neighbors and residential, the buffering is, you know, those are the benefits of this overlay, is to kind of point at those things out and create code for them.
Light glare is mentioned on page 4, and one of the things that I don't think we have in our code yet is a good grasp on the light pollution that comes off of the older style lights, which has not been found on the LED lights. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's something that we can get as part of this overlay that eventually makes its way into our permanent code, but I'd like to ask staff to get us something on that and bring it back so that we could get something more specific into there. So that way we're kind of preserving the darkness of the area, but mm-hmm. providing safety for the residents.
So our code actually does have all of that in there. Our lighting code is actually one of the most stringent. It's already in there. Full cutoff fixtures are required. The one area that did not happen is the... That was before my time.
She said that first.
But it's on Bendigo or Ballarat, where they put the old lights down Ballarat. Cool. And then when the historic lights again got extended down to the poorhouse, there was discussion of do you extend the existing, and they went with the non-full cutoff, and it does cause way too much glare. Now no longer in North Bend can those be installed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had one comment about just looking at something in there back on page 3. It talks about acres zoned in EP1 in the city, and then there's a comment about it would take 5.93 acres out, and it would just makes it sound like, oh, it's just 0.01%, no big deal. However, that doesn't include ranking those, and I don't know if that has been done as far as how this piece and its location and its size compares. Yeah, so that 0.01 could mean something more, I don't have that information, but
Some of the zones in the middle of the river, it doesn't apply. Right?
So are you getting at as far as the value of the property, if industrial?
Relative to everything else that's left.
Yeah, out of those 335 acres, I don't know how many specific parcels that is, but, to consider that in switching it to the residential.
Much, in that vein, how much of the EP1 falls in the special flood hazard area versus areas outside of it that has a direct impact on
how people would
be interested in building?
That's a study that, we're not going to be able to provide a economic analysis as to whether this parcel, if developed as residential, is your highest, best, EP2 or rank
right.
down the. But you can say it is close to the freeway and it's on one of your main arterials, so it's definitely accessible. That being said, one thing that we thought about too is you have quite a bit of EP2 land on the bookends of town. And by doing that, you kind of direct that truck trafficking to those two bookends. And by developing something in the middle, you're going to drive that kind of industrial type use through drought. So, that's not really a scientific answer for you, but it is something that we considered on that impact of that kind of use.
Are we losing a grip on the HDR proposed zoning along the south side of North Bend Way going east from the Mount Sinai Road? Is that
that's what the city council changed back to cottage.
Right. Yeah. Right.
We are, aren't we?
Yeah. Yeah. They're going to take that officially up for good on the 8th of December, but that's where they told us that keep the zoning at cottage.
So, yeah. We had concluded we needed to have high-density zoning. We're lacking a lot of that inventory in town, so we need to start looking for places that we can actually install high-density where it makes sense and where it's not... where it doesn't impact existing neighborhoods to the extent that we horrendous. So this is another good reason to think about this as a place.
Thanks for the segue, Gary. The cottage, which is my favorite zone of the entire city, how would cottage zone apply here to the particular request?
Let's see, we did. So we said,
something there,
maybe on the bottom of page 2 of the proposed code, says these parcels may be comprised of HDR uses and or AP1 uses, comma, except single-family detached and cottage housing over 1,300 square feet is not allowed within this overlay. So you could have cottages under 1,300.
Which is actually another specific zone. This would actually, our cottage zone kind of defines a cottage as 1,700, excluding the garage. So this would, in theory, allow somebody to really build small ones. If we're going to allow it, we thought we'd see small. Otherwise...
It'd just be standard single family look.
Yeah, the townhome is another housing type that we don't have much of.
My reservation, first of all, I'd say I always defer back to the landowner. They should know what is best for their property. Having said that, we're sitting here together thinking about the city. And I see a project like this, and if I own the land, I'd be thinking, what if I could sell off half of them and rent out the rest? Now I've got a lot of rental housing. That's a totally different feel from the outside than everybody owns their home. So that's the piece I look at. And you're also creating kind of, at the moment, a little bit of an island for this neighborhood based on what else is going on in the city. So in theory, you've got some folks who have a rental apartment with X number of cars, some on the street, some at the house, some at the residence. Everybody knows what that feels like. And without an employment base in the city, they're all getting on I-90 as everybody's just preferred. Mm-hmm. So we've just chopped off an employment base potential, land use wise, and brought in people who are renting who are driving somewhere else to work. So there's this dance in my head that I hope we continue to talk about.
And the flip side is we've had a lot of discussions about how the people who work here in North Bend cannot live here because they can't afford to, and even that's even teachers. And
So. I go back, you know, rather than an outright rezone, an overlay gives the flexibility, whether it can be commercial or high density. So there's some flexibility. Curtis, do you have anything else?
No, I mean, I think everything I've thought of has been shared. I'm totally torn. I completely hear what the homeowners have to say. I'm going through the same thing where I live now. And thinking about what I would prefer to have there as opposed to what might be going in there is not the option that I want to be dealing with. But that is what we're tasked with. So.
Mr. Chair, would it be appropriate to poll the commissioners to see where we're at in the city right now with their thinking on this? Without making a motion.
Yeah, two I don't knows.
I think there's a few I don't knows and an interest in a gateway kind of plan to really figure out what the look and feel of coming off exit 32 and intersecting North Bend Way and what that drive should be like. So at this point, I don't think anybody's ready to vote. I think
not a vote, just a straw poll to see if are we thinking more towards the overlay or thinking more towards the remaining as an EP1.
I don't think there has been a voice that is an issue with the overlay. I think that the issue with is how the overlay would be applied.
Well, Gary, based on the fact that I think what you just said is you're not ready to make a recommendation tonight, which is understandable. What we could do is if you want to give us, what I hear you might like to see is maybe we could put some planning time into creating some gateway language and some gateway thinking that might actually hope to kind of play into what when we staff the whole issue next year. We can always come back and amend it and improve on it from the work you guys do next year. So this could be, if not a great start, if we nail it, great, but it also could be looked at as a start. And then, so I'm hearing gateway, and is there anything else in the realm of what we could...
Well, I'd also like to look at it in its totality, right? Because I like looking at it from just this parcel, but... Mm-hmm. Almost like a zoom out and walking through your guys' thoughts. As you mentioned earlier, let's do the industrial on the outer ends of town and we'll concentrate high-density residential here and here. I think there could be a healthy conversation in that piece. Maybe that'll get me away from this, I think we're hodgepodging it idea. That would be another thing to consider. And I think we should also look at some areas in our community that will be similar to what is kind of being thrown out there as a possible proposal and checking them out. And when you said three-story townhomes, I'm immediately thinking, excuse me, of the ones on Park, right? And then we're talking about a potential roundabout being at that three-way intersection, which is the only thing I think might help that intersection. I'm thinking of the casino roundabout, right? Because that's a three-way. So there's some different elements in our town that I just want to drive by the area to get more familiar with it. I know there's talk of some healthy trees. I don't know how tall the trees are.
They're beautiful, 100 feet tall.
So there's some elements there that I need to do just to recalibrate my brain.
Yeah.
Because then I can come to it with more of a trained idea on what the vision I have, at least. So maybe that could be homework. I'm going to take that as my own personal homework, but I encourage everybody else to do the same.
Mm-hmm. Just briefly, because I'm going to put a huge map here. But one thought was, you're totally fine. See, as you come into town on this, all the kind of the commercial starts right at that Cedar Falls intersection. This is commercial lower than that or south of that. Now, we do have a commercial proposal just north of this site, but it really literally is at the intersection.
Where the blue is?
Where the right below the blue in that first EP parcel. Yep.
That's the Chinook site.
Yeah, that's the Chinook site. So
are they gonna take up that whole site? Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in our mind, if you look at here industrial, that is the only parcel south of Cedar Falls Way that is commercial. And so if you bookend that intersection, you got residential on the west, southwest, and you would have then residential on the southeast.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of part of the informal line in
yeah. So you're drawing an invisible line down Cedar Falls all the way down 136. Right.
Yeah. So that was kind of
and everything. There. This side is residential. Everything that side. Mm-hmm.
There has to be an old road rig that goes through that piece.
Mm-hmm. So it kind of naturally felt like everything north of Cedar Falls kind of orients more to North Midway, which is your commercial core.
Apart from being a comfortable thing to consider when I look at the map, what strategic implications does that have, having this side be residential, that side be not?
Strategic? In strategic in...
In just the planning of the city and the controlling growth and movement and... Because it sounds nice to say, yeah, let's just draw a line here, and this side is residential, and that side is commercial. But
I don't know if there's a strategic. It is maybe in my mind it was a balancing of intensities, based on proximity to each other. Once you get to the intersection, the intersection itself creates a different level of intensity because you're dealing with intersection. And at that point, when you transition into commercial, it kind of feels natural.
And it's sad that that other side is commercial because to me that has the great views of the river and of the mountain, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I hear it.
Yeah. But, you know.
How is the intersection of the east running off of the east project?
How is the wood? The ingress and egress of Chinook. But
is it just
I think both that.
Yeah.
It's both ways.
It is.
Yeah. They're probably gonna have pull through, right?
And that's what I was saying.
Yeah.
Well, this is going on 436, they have two exits that they
can. Right, but we're still reviewing it and our engineers are
Can I ask a question?
So
will this increase or decrease the value of our houses?
It's hard to say.
Yeah, that would be a study that you could probably have different opinions, you know.
So I'll try and ask you a question. So Jeannie's location right now is in what zone?
Jeannie is in the EP2.
Compare that to the EP1, which is the southern zone.
EP2 allows all the more heavy.
So they're actually manufacturing.
They're manufacturing.
And fabrication.
Truthfully, they're so close that we've talked in the Planning Commission many times, is what really is there a reason to have EP1 and EP2?
Mm-hmm. I remember.
Yeah. And they are that close. And I would actually have to say, I'd have to go back through the code one by one to tell you the exact specifics.
So could GD expand into this location if they got into that position?
Into which? I can on the internet. GD's considering, in their current state, yes, because they're not manufacturing on site.
So then a homeowner who had property next to the existing Genie facility could argue pretty strongly that their property value is impacted negatively by that factory circumstance. And then I answer your question.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're looking at some strategy behind a gateway plan. If any of the planning commissioners have ideas or specifics they think of, please email them to the staff. Mm-hmm. Any other further comments?
I'll just comment that it seems like in a couple different ways we're all struggling with. But one of the very first notes I made when I started reading through this is, put in parentheses, too many zones. We've got too many zones. It would be great if we had fewer to choose from, and then it would be very clear for the landowners who they want to change it or not. Everything's not going to become an overlay. So part of me wants to go back through and look at our zones again, which is a big project that I don't really want to do at the same time. The other part of me is saying, wait a minute, we've got a landowner here who's made an application and done the hoops it's supposed to go through. We need to give them an answer. So I hope that we don't drag this out, because there's somebody waiting for an answer.
So to your first point, and technically we cannot change our zoning map for a year?
It will be, yes. You've passed your recommendation on to the City Council. They're considering that. So if they approve it on the 8th, which I'm anticipating, it would probably be approved by the end of the year. So it would be, I'm getting specific, a year from approval, yes.
So theoretically, all we could do would be an overlay.
I do have just a comment. I understand we're doing an exercise in zoning. I can't get away from what I've seen and the specific plans for this. And the numbers that we went through in the last few months, that there's, my understanding, somewhere between 600 and 700 in the pipeline, which far exceeds our 25-year projected or estimated growth. We're already there. And now this is now on top of that. And then how do we maintain this rural character that brought the majority of us here? I'm just not, it's not adding up for me.
Well, I think the first thing you're talking about is the targeted homes, right? And those are permitted, but yet not yet, or their applications are not yet permitted, right? And those are all single-family homes.
That's lots, too, right? That's parcels, not so much building permits, right?
Or those are single-family permits.
In the pipeline, the 700?
They're units, just call them units, yeah.
So when I spoke to the city council, and we think about our overall planning as a city, and we had 48% as single-family and 40% as open and public spaces and government buildings. And 3% of that is HDR. So to me, that says a rural city. After all, North Bend is a city. Mm-hmm. How do you want to balance your city, and what kind of variety of people do you want within that city? That's what this commission gets to.
Yeah. So it's just the sheer number right now is it's a lot for a short amount of time when we're talking about 25 years. You know, for it to fill in that amount of time is different than, wow, this stuff's coming 5 years. And I agree, like, that's why I'm torn with this, is we need HDR, and we've had those discussions, and there's a lot of pros of locating it here.
Do you want to add anything? Sorry.
On that, I mean, that's an understandable concern. Your comp plan is a 20-year vision. It does not meter growth. It says, this is what we anticipate in 20 years. If it comes on the front end, or like in 2007 when nothing was happening and everybody felt like it was going to come on the back end of 20 years, that's kind of the ebb and flow. That's why the kind of the context is a 20-year, because you end up doing that. Right now, we're definitely in a market that's booming and everybody's wanting to capitalize. Will that slow? History says it will, right? So we don't have any way to say, we have enough, unless we, A, have issues that we, that we create. Right, something like that. And that's a different thing. So understandable. I think the main thing, though, is the best way to be, I guess, proactive in establishing the town that you want to see at the end of the 20 years, regardless of when that develops, is to create the plan to get to implement it. Yeah.
Because that's the other hurdle here, right? Everybody has a different vision in their head when you say charm, when you say rural character, when you say how it used to be. I mean, there's all these different things, but thankfully this body can control that vision if it's a shared one and all the design standards that we do. So when we start accommodating the growth, hopefully we can direct it in certain areas that will make sense, but also that those standards will preserve what we think is our rural charm and character, right? Because I agree, I'm completely torn. You need high-density residential. And at the same time, it's like, whoa, there's more people.
One thing to add, and kudos to the body and our city council, and I don't know if the citizens are aware of this, but one thing North Bend has done is we have created a pretty high standard of new construction standards for architecture. About a year ago, this planning commission took on the multifamily standards and increased, really developed a higher architectural standard. So when we would see something like this, because we actually kind of saw this coming down the pipeline, it's at some point we knew we were going to see some townhome or higher multifamily type style. We would get the look and feel that we wanted to see. And that includes, you won't see buildings with exterior staircases and things like that. You will see a more single-family approach to, a duplex to blend that compatibility. So that was, we're ahead of the game there. So that's it.
And that's one way to control growth, too.
And the only other thing I add is the chair mentioned, if you have ideas for us, I guess we'll have to talk internally, but struggling a little bit with what are the key points you want to see for the gateway. There is the bigger picture, but there is the applicant here who's looking for an answer, like you said. We're talking, you know, on that, how do you focus that on the one parcel on the corner, you
we
know?
Need five artist renderings, potential future states.
I mean, so we have in there the, you know,
setbacks.
We have a,
setbacks from the road.
Right, so we have that in there.
Trees specific that to that there. Area.
Right.
Type of trail system and construction standards.
Right, we have that in there, yep. So I feel like we have,
signage,
you know,
and directional signage.
Yep.
Including the signs for the elk, don't forget.
Yep.
Elk viewing.
Yeah, direction.
Elk viewing can bring a lot of money to our city. If we could only work with Meadowbrook Farm to do that. Sorry.
So besides the signage and directional, I feel like we have everything else in there. For this, we still want to do the gateway, and we hate to have it follow the development. And we could look at all the properties, you know, with Chinook and then up to the intersection of Tanner Road and North End Way, you know, in the more long term, for a more long term project, but for this specific overlay.
And also to get recalibrated on all the new development that's going on in that area already.
Right. Yeah.
I'd love to hear or understand how this overlay might actually closely fit one of our other zones.
What do you mean?
Well, cottage keeps coming to mind. If this was a cottage zone, would we be talking about an overlay?
If they wanted to develop cottage?
If somebody came in and submitted an overlay proposal and paid for it in the cottage zone, we'd be talking overlay. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, would this project already fit in the cottage zone?
No. Only a certain percent of it.
30% of any proposal in the cottage zone could be multifamily, yeah. 30% of it. But it would have to be a mix.
So are you suggesting...
Well, I'm just trying to think through the steps. If we were going to go through and basically create... I mean, we're calling it an overlay, but it's another zone. It's just called an overlay.
So it's an extension of that Tanner Junction overlay.
But if it were to become cottage zone, for example, how much effort and change would there need to be done for what the applicant's asking for?
The
a
same,
lot, or a little,
same
or
level, I would say, because it doesn't fit in college. It's multifamily. What they're seeking fits under HDR.
Okay, then what's HDR then?
Well, we have a year to wait. I mean, you're changing
are
the underlying zoning.
Are you talking about changing the zoning to HDR? Because right now...
Well, it would really clear up the air if we knew that we have an already existing zone that we can apply.
That's
creating a new wheel.
I actually go back to the fact that if we just apply the HDR, you're going to lose all
flexibility.
The ability to say, hey, we don't want driveways on 148, 136. We want a gateway.
Okay. It's a more customizable zoning.
Perfectly so.
Once it's developed and it's there, then you can change the zoning to make it that this is what it is. And if it were an EP1 use coming in for an application, we wouldn't even see it.
Yep.
And we would try to work through having the gateway feature there, but we have nothing.
We have
nothing else to go off of.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for the benefit of the folks that are here, once we make a decision, what are the next steps? If we were to decide to accept this overlay, how does that, just for their
thing? Well, because I forgot to mention that.
Yeah.
So after we pass it on, it goes to City Council, and they will hold their own public hearing. Will you have another chance to voice your opinions and input and comment?
So we'll get another letter.
Legally, legally, the public hearing's been held here. The recommendation goes on to City Council. City Council can choose to do a public hearing. They usually do, but I just want to, you know.
If they don't change the recommendation from the Planning Commission, they may not hold another public hearing.
The best thing to do is once you've been noticed on a project, you follow that project through approval or denial. So that would be what make sure to kind of stay into on that.
The North Road out onto 436, is that really a fire lane?
That was the old freeway.
I'm talking about on the proposed property, the north. On the north line where you have the westbound exit, is that actually for a fire?
That is only there because we made a provision in this overlay that there was no access onto that road. Okay.
the applicant was kind of concerned with that, and we talked about that, and we talked about having a ride-only or a fire access, secondary fire access. So because we're not designing it with this project, that's why the language says it may be allowed at city's discretion. That being said, you know, there's somebody made a concern about the illegal left-hand turns. You can mitigate that by improvements within the roadway. Like we did one at Bartels to avoid that illegal left-hand turn. But those are now dialing into the details of actually development review, where we would evaluate that with a traffic analysis and our fire department on hand and what have
you. What I'm just saying is that as we become a roadway, they could be used for other purposes, other ingress and egress. And if this is going to be used as part of the beginning point of building into the EP1 area, and that road comes into play in terms of other uses besides just the local family use, it becomes more of a public right-of-way. Just want to make sure it's in the right place.
Okay.
You know, as we're thinking about it, because we do seem to be still a little spongy about project is, suits our purpose for gateway, it suits our purpose for the need for high density, but would that road actually go there? Would there actually be a road there if it wasn't for what we're trying to do with this overlay situation? Is that road necessary?
Which road are you? You mean
the road along the north property line that exits onto 436, is that road actually necessary?
Right.
Is it because you're using it as a leverage, or is it necessary?
That's what Jen was saying, the traffic study will look at that. It may not be necessary.
It may not be necessary, and it says at the city's discretion. It's something we're...
It could be the wrong place to put a road.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Right.
It makes sense to me if it wasn't required for fire suppression how many people can occupy that site? 40 some people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you might need that. It's a fire lane anyway, but I'm just saying, if it's being thought of as some sort of a future public right of way, you have different conditions on that road.
So the way it's worded is we don't talk about where it would go. We do say an exit only may be allowed onto 436 Avenue at the city's discretion. That's just basically saying we'll defer to have this conversation once we know the information off the and decide what the best location is, if at all.
I have another
just
comment on the gateway. I agree with the gateway. I think that's the last older stand of trees that's left on 436. A suggestion to look at within the language that's on page 3 is that when I first read it, I liked what it said. I don't know if it's necessarily strong enough with just focus areas for this include.
Right.
Does that mean, well, this would be great, but we've kind of made some other calculations and in the middle of the property would be better, and then all of a sudden it's cleared out in our... Because the gateway, I think, for me, the vision isn't to preserve the entire stand. It's probably, I don't know, 50 feet, 100 feet, something, you know, kind of line of sight from the road. And so that would be, I think, a requirement, not just a focus area. I don't know if you can just consider that.
I had thought about that, having a minimum size. What if we want the size of it to be?
Yeah.
Are there setbacks or like a 30-foot buffer?
Right now the project, other than the tree preservation, could put a building within 15 feet.
Like on 140th with EP2.
That's different. Yeah.
That's a transitional
area. But
is that appropriate for a gateway? Is a transitional buffer,
Well, that's what you can do within the overlay, right? You can draft that language. So you can determine 10 feet, you can determine 100 feet.
If we have
We have a lot of HDR stacked up against this from 4 through 6 easterly. This is the gateway for multifamily housing. Why not put the best right in front? And we're going to, if you look at the plan, it looks like we have a continuous road, multifamily going all the way out, way past 136 into the industrial site. So we have one of the finest multifamily units right on the front end, rather than having some natural.
So what you're proposing maybe is a stand of 30, 40, 50 feet, and then an opening, and then a stand of 30, 40, 50 feet,
no.
An opening, or?
I don't care about the trees. I use the trees as an amenity to the quality of this multifamily structure. In other words, make it an inviting and welcoming neighborhood for multifamily living. That's what we're trying to promote. In this particular area, we're going to have a lot of multifamily on both sides of 436. So why not put the best up front to draw people into the area for multifamily lifestyle? The trees are wonderful, but the trees are gone. They're not there anymore. They shouldn't be there. They're taking up space. But they are beautiful trees.
Mr. Ryan.
I'm sorry. I don't like the way I sound, believe it or not. I don't like the way I'm sounding.
Mr. Ryan.
But I am talking about the reality.
Yeah. So I'd like to ask your insight as a former forester. Was this former warehouser land at all or at one time? Was this something that was harvested? Is this second
growth? Well, pretty close to the railway.
This is all second growth. Probably third growth.
So how old is this, 50, 75?
Those trees are probably 55 years old.
So it's, yeah, I understand now your statement. Okay.
I'll throw something else since we're having this conversation.
I've been there 3 years, and they were bigger than that. Wow.
Well, just remember, everybody, we are, right now, what we're trying to do is strike balance. And I think, you know, to save the trees and accommodate what's going to inevitably be a development of some sort, I think right now, whether it's an industrial development or a multifamily, we're saying, hey, we actually want to see 20% retained. Thanks. On top of that, we do require a replanting plan for any significant tree going down. So even though you might not see all the big ones stay, it's usually either 2-to-1 or 3-to-1, depending on, you know. So in the end, what we hope to is in another 20, 30 years, you start, and I know that sounds, but that's like long-term planning. So there's balance, but I think right now you've got a good balance going. What I did hear Mr. Ryan say that I thought was a good provision on a gateway is if we're going to allow a multifamily structure there, even if it's intermixed with this gateway tree feeling, let's make sure it's high end, one of the higher end qualities. And so there I'm sitting there thinking, oh, that's a good idea. We can add some, maybe some additional higher standards on architecture, maybe. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. So that's what I took from the
One quick comment. If remember that on 136 is where we tried to put the townhome concept to make it feel more residential and not make it feel like multifamily, so that you felt like you're driving into a neighborhood, and that visually you'll see that going down 136. As you go down 436, you run out of trees pretty fast, mm-hmm. and there's about 100 feet of trees, and then all of a sudden it's the old roadway coming through there that used to be a line 90, and there's nothing.
And I think, you know, as we get to the end of 436 and we enter North Bend Way, and then we have industrial zoned on the other side of it. So I think we need to get to our gateway plan quickly so we can, you know, work out all these intersections. So if Planning Commission has nothing further, then we can move on to item number 6.
Yeah.
Okay, item number six is North Bend Municipal Code.
Thank you for coming up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There we go. North Bend Municipal Code 18.10.050.1.16, cottage clarification.
Okay. So we are right now. Okay.
Yes. Even the correct one, I still don't understand.
Okay. So what this does is we're reviewing our first couple cottage projects, and actually this doesn't really affect those, but it did bring it to our attention that it wasn't worded properly. Polygon's actually incorporating some one-story homes into their development. But what this says, if you look at the existing language, it says the second floor of approximately 30% of the total number of homes shall not exceed 1.5 times the floor area of the main floor. So if you have a main floor of 1,000 square feet, you might multiply that by 1.5, we're actually regulating a bubble.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to say an upside down kick.
Yes. Yeah. That was not the intent. It was actually to create, the intent was in cottage where you have sometimes 40-foot lots, you have boom, 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 boom. Homes are closer together.
So, row homes.
Huh?
Row houses.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that to mitigate, like, everybody's home looking and feeling like the same square space, the way it's worded in the proposed language creates, if you have your 1,000 square foot floor, it actually it forces more the story and a half look. So you might have a box here, and then 30% would have that different. So it forces a different, it basically forces this. So instead of having a bunch of boxes built like this, then one might have to do that and build the second floor into this space. So,
floor space, floor space. You're talking about the plates, right? So floor space is really.
Yes.
Doesn't matter how high the ceiling is.
Yes, but if you Google this provision in any cottage zone, I can't say any, but a lot of cities have this exact provision because what it does is it breaks up the box the monotony of the box.
I kind of get what you put on the board, but I don't get that. Extract it and read this statement and come up with the same idea. So that's where I'm kind of at a loss. Like, the proposed corrected language, does it make more sense to say for approximately 30% or more of the homes, the total second floor area shall not exceed 1.5 times the area of the main floor? Because I don't...
Chair, are you accepting public comment?
For you, Mr. McFarland, I will welcome public comment.
Well, might surprise you.
Yes.
I've got an idea for you. Now, pass it out and share some proposed language.
Too many pages, sir. We can't accept that many pages right now.
All right. How about one apiece and a few left over?
Yeah.
So, first off, to clarify for all the commission members, so I'm speaking tonight, Tom McFarland, on behalf of John Day Homes. And so first thing is we support the intent of what staff's up to. But when I read the statement, I was confused because approximately means plus or minus. And more is only greater. And those two words, therefore, seem in conflict. And so, as I sometimes do, I offer some help to staff. And so, therefore, I think the wording that gets to what you're looking for is, for a minimum of 30% of the total number of homes, the total floor area shall not exceed 1.5 times the area of the main floor.
You said main floor.
Well, the first part is 30% of the total number of homes. The total floor area shall not exceed 1.5 times the area of the main floor. I believe that's getting at what staff's trying to do.
But you wrote main home.
On that
Yes.
Well, I apologize.
We didn't get the final draft.
You didn't get the final draft.
Yeah, Christmas.
I think the reason the approximately was in there because if it was 25 or 28.
We actually had the word minimum for approximately in a discussion we had with a different builder, and they brought up a good point, and what Jamie just said is we did want to have somewhat of flexibility of if it's 29, 28, because one thing about creating code is you never anticipate everybody's scenario. It's always different, and let me just think through the minimum thing because it had to do with one story.
Can you tell me what they're after here? I get the architectural piece of it.
I'm trying to make homes shorter.
You got the idea that you're going to have the top floor in any way larger than the lower floor is kind of a bizarre idea. I don't understand that. Because it's going to, unless you've got a porch that extends out over living space.
Roger, it doesn't count.
Yeah?
So you can build out over your garage.
But that wouldn't be considered the main floor, would it?
Garage? Well, your garage isn't included in square footage. So your main floor is 800 square feet, but your upstairs is 1,200. But it goes over the garage, which isn't included. That's where it makes sense to me.
Okay, I get that.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is why this is standard language. It's because it's a scale. The 1.5 creates a scale. So you can mathematically go, if you have a 1,000 square foot home and you multiply it by 1.5, the top floor can't be more than 500 square feet. If you have a 1,400 square foot footprint of a home, the top floor can, it's
30% of the total.
No, the 30% is the number of units. So
it's 150%.
Yeah.
Of the total.
Of the ground floor, yeah. Total floor area.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
is the garage the floor? Is there a floor in the garage?
It's the home because the garage is excluded from the calculation of cottage for.
So where do you start the floor?
Where do you start?
Which is the lower floor? Which is the floor that you're referencing when you say 100% of something?
For approximately 30% or more of the homes, the total floor area shall not exceed 1.5 times the area of the main floor. You could say ground floor, footprint.
So if you have a 1,000 square foot bottom floor.
Yes.
1.5 times is what? Another 150?
500.
Yes. So you could only have a 500 square foot upstairs,
right,
on 30% of the homes.
Right. And part of it is, right, we're also trying to get them to build smaller homes in your cottage zone. And this is just another avenue to say, and by doing that, they won't
they're
build
not boxy,
box.
They're going to be pitched.
Right.
I got it now.
So what was the 30% or more of the homes on your rewrite?
Well,
because the existing was talking about 30%.
Yeah.
The proposed change, Mr. McFarland there, was got rid of the or more. So I'm just wondering, what
right.
was that trying to speak to? Because I get the approximate language.
Yeah. I didn't really agree, I have to be honest with you, with the other developer who thought 30%, approximately 30% of the total number of homes. That's pretty clear to me. It's like if you have 100 homes,
right,
approximately 30 have to meet this. There was a concern that he was wondering if it meant 30% of the homes that didn't meet that standard already, like the one stories, or so then we added, I don't know. See, I don't
if
think that's a big
deal. Home, it doesn't apply.
Well, it actually, yeah, or you could say 30% actually somehow creates diversity.
Can I read my scribble and see if I've covered it even without knowing what the hell you're talking about?
Yeah.
So I came up with not more than 30% of the units within the zone. I may be going off track of the zone conversation, but it applies to me. If I think about two plats put together, you could have a developer come in and go, okay, because of this rule, I'm going to have five lots here and five lots here and five lots here. You get the dance, right? So I'm trying to accomplish the rest of that. So 30% of the units within the zone shall have a second floor living space in excess of 150% of its main floor living space.
You know,
not more than that.
Yeah. We went and compared all the other jurisdictions.
You like the language that's already there.
I would be, I think it's somewhat, whether it says approximately 30% or more of the homes or what we had before or what Rob proposed. If you want to go with what Rob proposed for a minimum of, might want to add the word approximately 30% of the total number.
See, that's a goofy, that's like I was approximately speeding.
Yeah, but what happens is, say a developer comes in and they have,
83 homes.
Yeah, and they have, for some reason they have X amount of floor plans that have, and so they get the 29%. They have to go redesign a whole new, or some odd scenario happens. They're having that flexibility to get to the general intent is okay.
Yeah.
58.1.
Yeah. So, approximately, if somebody came in and said, well, I think I made approximately, I'm going to propose 19%. We'd say, no, you're going to the hearing examiner, we'll debate it at the hearing examiner. We think approximately is somewhere in the 28. And so that's where you do have that provision or that step that you go to the hearing examiner. And if you're not on the same page, they present their argument, we present ours, and the hearing examiner makes it.
So I wonder if for clarification we say it's close to 30%. Because then our intent is clear. We want you as close to this 30 number. And it takes out the ambiguity that...
I'm fine with ambiguity. Yeah. I think the flexibility that these guys are going to need to have to,
I thought you were comfortable with that flexibility.
2 months on top of 10 years.
Yeah. What we were trying to get at was just say, hey, basically the minimum is 30. Go over.
Yeah. You can go to 60.
Yeah, great.
That's what I was going to say.
The flip side of it
this
would
sets
be
a very fine
the
line.
Approximate language. Mm-hmm.
Just
somehow forcing you to do greater than 30%, even though you're, because 35% is approximately 30%. The question occurred to me is, that I wanted to ask you about was, when you're talking about a project that would be mixing single story and second story, would you not read this as, if I bring in 30% single-story homes, I've met that.
We would read it as you met the intent, yeah. Yeah.
So that therefore, all the 70% remaining could all be
That's why I said the two.
Are all the main floors the same size?
We've just been in the plat. We haven't looked at each one of their homes yet. But
so will that factor into it?
Well, in the cottage zone, they can't be all the same.
Because my assumption when I read it was that all the footprints were the exact same size for the main floor.
The zone is multiple different footprints.
Yeah.
If it's a problem to have the word approximately, it's fine if it's a minimum. I'm just saying, then if somebody runs into a spot that they're at 29.2%, or you can't really have that, 29, we just have to go, sorry.
Can you put a parenthetical? At staff discretion. Well, okay, so what's the acceptable range? Because you could put a plus or minus 2% in parentheses.
That defines approximate.
Approximately 30% parentheses plus or minus 2% or something like that.
Statistical
average. That's why I would prefer then just to go to a minimum and say it's 30%. Because
then you puts you in the pickle that you just said, that if somebody comes in with 28.2%, now they're going to have to redesign it all.
Let's say they came in and it said not less than 30% or something physical.
Not that I care.
Fixed figure. Couldn't the applicant address it in some way with you? I mean, couldn't they?
Nope. I have to, I mean, when we're administering the code, we can't be like that.
Can't you put a declaration at the bottom of the page when you have this, just say something to the effect that the discretion of the reviewer takes precedence or anything else? Mm-hmm. I mean, you should be able to something, get rid of this stupid mathematical.
There is an overall statement, Mr. Ryan, that says something about the CED director has overall authority. And
Yeah. Well, we'll just create another overlay. Yeah. That'll fix it.
Here, wait, let me bring this back.
Okay.
You guys have been functioning with the word approximately, and we've been functioning with it very well for the last, you know. So the word, that part of this was not the change. The problem was, however it got codified to regulate bubbles or balloons. Versus when you do the math of the existing language, you actually are making the house get fatter at the top versus, so that is what we're trying to correct. We haven't seen a problem with the word approximately yet. That word has allowed us to sit down with a developer and go, all right, yeah, you have one-story homes, great, and you have no one-story homes, so.
With the approximate minimum.
It's really the difference between the two phrases within the sentence, right? But you're saying, for the language I was suggesting, you're saying, instead of saying a minimum of 30%, you could still say approximately 30% of the total number of homes. That's the first statement, period. Yeah. That's fine. Mm-hmm. It's what you're really trying to correct is what comes after the comma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Isn't there some rule about reasonable people?
You wish.
No, a lot of these numbers, you turn to look like a jackass. I mean, what a reasonable person could decide would be that this plan would be good at 31%, that would maybe 29%.
But
so they need it for the math.
You've got to have a guideline.
You've got to have a guideline, otherwise, I mean, truthfully, it's easier for developers to know if they want to know exactly what our standards are. That's why he wants different language right here. This is exactly what happens is he's worried about what I'm going to consider approximate to be. So he wants to clarify that.
But in all respect to Rob, his definition is his definition. Another person might see it as a different way.
But, right, and that's why the language has to be clear. Rob's proposing something, so he walks away from this going, I know I have to make a minimum. The language we propose is allowing us flexibility to be lenient, but Rob's concern is it also allows us flexibility to be more restrictive. And legally, we would go to a hearing and lose that if we established the 30% as approximate minimum, and then we told them, we actually want 32%. But that's the kind of what he suggested, and that's, I can understand that, but that doesn't happen. What we're saying, by us putting the word approximate right before the actual minimum standard, is basically establishing a flexibility of that minimum. And it never goes higher, because it would be a difficult battle in for the city. If you want a higher standard, you put approximately 35%. But,
you've chosen the slide.
Approximate 30%, not to exceed 32%.
Meanwhile, the hearing examiner doesn't get until 6 months after the project hits the market.
Yeah. I'm fine with the proposed language, but I think, like of the staff's proposed language, but I think almost an example of the main floor being 1,000 square feet, in this example, your maximum second floor could be 500 square feet.
You want me to put the example in?
I think whatever example is realistic, please put in those numbers, but something simple like that brings clarity to what the statement is.
Okay.
So I understand, you know, or you can draw a picture of the house, 1,500 with a pitched roof, you know.
Okay.
Then all of us who are wondering what exactly are you trying to say, I think would be solved.
That's what I'm trying to throw. Would this be the existing drawing of the? I can draw it on the board because I'm trying
to
figure this out.
You're trying to figure out what the other
thing
one
that
was.
I've come up with instead of that is something like this. This is going to be a boxy house here, but split in half. And you have, I guess it'd be, so split this in half. So it'd be a 500 square foot garage. and then a 1,000-foot lower level, and then a 1,500-foot second story. So is that what the existing language was, an example of that?
The existing language says
30% of the total number of homes will not exceed 1.5.
So that's the bubble.
So let's say your ground floor is 1,000 square feet. We're actually saying then you multiply that by 1.5, you get 1,500 square feet. So you're going to have 1,000 square feet ballooning out to. So it doesn't work. It just doesn't work.
Well, it doesn't that.
It could. It's a box. Because this doesn't count, you said, in the. This would be 1.5 times would be left. So if the second floor would extend over the garage.
So actually we're creating a box. Yeah. We're either creating a balloon or a box. So we're doing exactly what we didn't want to do.
It's Tetris.
Yeah. Good.
So instead what you're shooting for is the...
That's the other part I haven't figured out.
1,000.
Visual.
And then 500.
Yeah, and then put a roof over that. Architecturally, yeah. There you go. That's what you would get. And that's the story and a half. So
does that preclude that 500 square feet from being a glass office space with a porch all the way around it?
No. Nope.
Was the porch
you
included
could put
in
a glass? Well, you know,
I was just giving you some free examples.
Structural standards, but yeah.
This is a wonky.
Your garage should be about 800 square feet because you're 10 feet deep and 8 feet wide.
Pardon?
It's not part of the conversation. I'm just.
But what this did do is, so you can see that if you could have another 1,000 square feet on top of that, what you just built. So without this provision, you could have. I'm doing this in a weird angle. You can have 1,000 down here and 1,000 up here, and then all of a sudden, you have. So if you put these two homes next to each other. You would get that older town approach feel of scale,
different
yeah. But that maybe is. I'll have to think about how to articulate that, so you guys, because the council will have the same perspective on trying to understand what the actual, what the difference.
Future.
Yeah, we could show a little houses.
And the other piece that's in here to me is the short plot conversation. So somebody's got 4 or 5. Whatever the number is, that math gets really bad. Mm-hmm. One weird hole, how the house to meet that, and then you get the others that are the same.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we could get really dialed into it. You have 5, you only have to do 1, but.
Or if you have 5, you have
that's
to do
why
2.
We kind of got into the approximate, because in the end, if somebody's trying to meet the intent, that allows some ability to go. That discussion.
Why is it applying to short plots at all instead of just long plots?
I don't think.
But here's the thing, Jen, I think about anytime you have a approximate phrase, or you have a gray area.
Yeah.
When the architects and designers and engineers are all sitting around and they've got to deal with that, and somebody spent $100,000 to get plans in front of you that you can approve.
Yeah.
That's a question mark.
Well, usually the process is you come in and you have what we call pre-application, and we have that discussion. If you guys want to go with minimum, the only thing it does is it says we will say to them it's a minimum, and they'll ask us for, well, we only have 29, we only meet 29%. We'll say, well, unfortunately, there's actually no deviation, so...
I'm fine with approximate, but I want to know if you have 5 and it's 1.5 units, do you round up to 2?
Or 7. That's an even odd number.
Rounding quite
odd. Yeah, just, or should we say for every 5 there should be 2? And just be specific. So it doesn't matter what you have if it's divisible by 5. I don't know.
So we're not ready to move forward on this one tonight either, are we?
Yeah, but
we have a public hearing at the next meeting.
Oh, I'm fine with the language. It's just I need the visual.
I'm not sure I want the public hearing us talk about this.
Yeah. Grounding is, in our code. Let me think that one through, because we could clarify when does it trigger.
I don't want to get too specific, but I want to be clear.
Yeah, right. And that's exactly, it helps
very much so. All right. We will bring back our grand proposal next meeting.
Would
they consider the architectural?
Is the visual aid?
Sorry.
Sir, go ahead.
I was just going to, it's part of the joke, like I've been doing all night. If all of a sudden the first iteration, the original language you're trying to change, seems to make sense.
No.
Oh, no.
No.
That's a good joke.
So,
I think we said that to ourselves
five times. Yeah, I get it.
Okay.
Just a personal note to staff, I really appreciate saving paper. But I do not like the snippet of one line. At least include the upper paragraph so I can see what the overall language and what the A, B, C, D, E, F lead into it.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah, do your carriage return at the last sentence.
That's the one where you first.
Well, that's actually the...
Number four.
Yeah.
Slide it.
I just...
Yeah.
And that way we have it in context, too. So it's...
Sure.
As you're reading down all those points, like Brenda was asking about what's included or not as part of that section.
Mm-hmm. You know, we do that a little bit, just so you know, on purpose, and I'll tell you why. Because when we do a code amendment, and it's specific to anything, when you add more language, it's
open
inevitable
for debate.
A few people start getting off topic.
No, come on.
So we will do that, or you could go to that code section and see how it... Yeah, I knew you would, that's why.
Just
but that's why we did it that way, is not to open up the whole section.
You want
to
do it here, just see. Could you remind me what's B again?
Yeah.
Okay, moving on to good of the order. Anybody have anything?
I did. Just something that happened, conversation that happened last night. When we were reviewing the park element piece, you had made a recommendation on the Frisbee Golf being extended to 18 holes or something like that. Well, ran into this parent whose son is an Eagle Scout and is looking to do a Frisbee Golf project with Snoqualmie. And where they're trying to figure out how to do it requires some U.S. Forest Service discussion and so forth. So I'm not sure how that process would play out here in North Bend, but I said, hey, you know, it's interesting that you say this because we were talking about this on the park element. And so part of the Eagle Scout thing is the scout has to come to a commission pitch, and apparently he's got all sorts of things dialed in. But I had mentioned the Meadowbrook Farms, and, you know, the thought was, well, it's kind of flatland at any rate. Point is that I know we're trying to do something in that vein. It hasn't gone through council yet for approval. But if that's something that local scouts could do, would that even be something that local scouts could do? And if so, how do I advise that family to proceed to talk to you, to council, or
we deal with the scouts all the time. No, have them come to us, and then what we'll do is we'll usually go to the council, make sure the council's in support of it, if it requires any city funding or city.
Well, and that's the thing is that apparently he's working with somebody named Joe Dockery, who I don't, but he does something with the Frisbee golf, and then either he has a connection or somebody has a connection with actually the poles and all the construction, and because it's a scout thing, they do it below cost. So there's an economic thing here, and also there's a community thing here, if we were to proceed with something like that.
Send them our way, and then what we'll do is we'll take it up.
Yeah, the one incarnation is so popular.
Yeah, and I can't remember where they said it was, but it was on this hillside, but it had U.S. Forest Service and the Parks Commission.
I think it's the Winery Park, Snoqualmie Pike Park.
Yeah, that's it. Snoqualmie Park Commission is like, but the dad is like, feels like they're stringing us along, and there's the U.S. Forest. Okay.
We'll take their work.
That's what I thought. I mean, I'd like to have
more communities. I think it'd be great to advance that. I guess the design is pretty critical, so that would be the only thing to someone should be reviewing that. I wouldn't mind.
But if they're saving money on the cost, then we can pay somebody good to design it.
And it sounded like there's some portability built into it, so the way they construct whatever the footers are for the poles, those are removable, and you can...
So the T-pads can be fairly permanent if they're putting in concrete pads.
Yeah, it sounded like they were in a contained vessel of some type, so they can be, I don't know.
You're talking about the hole, the pin.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then there's
T-pads. Yeah.
But the other thing...
Oh, I know where you start.
Yeah. The other thing would just be the traffic. And I think we hinted at it at the last meeting, but, you know, I ideally there would be a parking area off on that side. And if that is not possible, just really need to look at that. If everyone's going to be crossing the road like, you know, Frogger style.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's...
Well, and that's cool. The
Elk End.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway.
Well, I'll just direct them to you then.
Thank you, Brendan. Yeah. That was great. Anybody else for good of the order before I... Okay, first one I have. Trash impact fees are going to be raised in the city of North Bend.
Trash fees?
Yeah,
garbage fees.
Not trashy people.
No. I'm just wondering if we're missing an opportunity as a city to do something ourselves with our garbage and, you know, I don't know. I think it may be a better place as city council, but is there anything that we can do, I guess, with our trash instead of sending it off and find a good use for it?
Well, I'll be honest, I got to catch up on that. I haven't followed exactly what the proposal is on the fees and stuff. I do know, though, and I'll have somebody get a hold of you. Steve, the new owner of the bakery. His daughter came to a council meeting and gave just fabulous public comment and had done her research on composting for restaurants and what have you. And so I followed up on that a little, and it did sound like there was adjustments being made to the contract for that.
Allied?
Public,
okay.
Yeah.
Different names, different places.
Yeah. This department doesn't get involved in that contract, and we're not really...
not skilled in that area.
Worried about that, but we will. You know what I'll do is let me find out who would be the best one to give you a call.
Thank you.
Or an email.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
So my next point is, I never had a realization of traffic standards until we talked about our transportation plan. Uh-huh. I didn't know what ranking A, B, C, D, and F were. Uh-huh. I didn't know what wait times are. When we send out notices. Given that we hear so much about traffic, can we give a little informational piece about what a wait time at a A and F-like intersection is? You know, is there any mention of traffic or, you know, what this could entail? And just say that this current intersection that's closest to it is ranked at a A, B, C, or D. And so we perceive it to be current and continue on as that A, B, C, or D, or become an F.
We can't really say that until there's a traffic study out, but at the preliminary plat level, we do. I mean, that's discussed at the hearing.
I'm just, you know, trying to have public comment and be more focused so that they can talk, you know, to the important parts.
Mm-hmm.
There's two public comment periods, and the first is submission of application. So at that point, we're just saying, hey, everybody, we got an application in. Be aware, if you want to get involved, come in and look through the file. But it's even before we've done any review. Mm-hmm. You know, we have 21 days by law to get the letter out, and sometimes all we've done is make sure that the critical information is there. Whether it's correct, have a look. Then the next time is the public hearing, and that could be where we could potentially put a little more description into the project about traffic.
And I mean, if it was last measured in 2003, so be it. Mm-hmm. But you know, it gives some context to just where they are and that their wait times are in green compared to other areas like Front Street. That is it. Anybody have anything else, or should I entertain them?
It actually kind of dovetails off that a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think that we've all seen a lot of this. There's been a lot of concern and activity, particularly related to the recent elections, with people talking And the number one, no, it's a good thing in my mind when people start to have interest. But I started realizing, I don't think we do something like a Citizens Academy in the way that Snoqualmie does. Because I can't remember the last time there was something along that line that gives them an opportunity to learn a little bit more about the mystery of things like, did they know intersections got a grade, that kind of thing. And I'm not necessarily saying do a Citizens Academy, but have that information available. And I go hunting all the time. There's a lot of links that you can send people to.
Or just box to click on where it says government or citizen information, and Citizen Academy be, you know,
and
or learn
have
about
information
government.
Like that available. Because a lot of it is just confusion of not understanding what the language is. And it makes people even more confused because they're hearing, they don't know what we mean when we talk about certain things. And having an easy reference point. I'd love the Citizens Academy, but it's a lot of work, and I'd rather just work on the other important things that you have to get done. But to be able to provide it in some way, I think that it would help a lot. I've been spending a lot of time explaining really basic concepts to people who seek me out. You know about all this stuff, right? To be able to just, and it's really pretty simple things. What is zoning?
Frequently asked questions or...
Yeah.
Why is there zoning and planning?
Exactly. Well, and that's a common one. Well, why are you zoning outside of, we're in King County, right, and having to get into, well, what's the UGA? Just having really basic answers. Because one of the clear things is that it needs to be handed. It's not something that's sought out.
Elizabeth, I think that does for Snoqualmie, it gives the appearance of transparency. Which is what citizens really want. They want to be able to know if they want to know. They want to find something out there. They think they
can find the thing on the Snoqualmie side with that Citizens Academy, is I also know a lot of people who've done that, that then get involved with commissions and other parts of city government in a greater way. So there's a benefit to that, but it's a big project that they do. They do it a couple times a year. Exactly. They got a little bit more to work with. To do that, but something as simple as basically having our equivalent of it accessible through the website, because trust me, there are people out there that will point people to the links.
You just get more frustrated.
Well,
it depends how the information is.
But yes. Just those real simple things. And again, it's because I've been spending a lot of time explaining to me what this is all about. And if they're getting frustrated enough to come to me to hunt me down, to ask questions, you know there are a lot more out there that would not be able to get the answers.
Yeah. Well, and this is typical of a city that went from no growth because of a water moratorium to pretty metered growth because of a recession that hit right after the moratorium got lifted to now. And you know, these are typical concerns that every community goes, through. So that's a good point.
So, whole information's officer is what essentially we need. Seriously, I mean, we need earmark on our budget for town halls, extra type of work sessions that you're talking about. Somebody that has that information background to figure out strategies to communicate more, because that transparency is absolutely needed.
Or at least in the interim, having some links.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that is a good point, because there was a proposal. Ken wanted, the mayor wanted to hire a communications person. Because Snoqualmie has, for just in communications, like their public relations, PIO, they have four, I think, people that are oriented to disseminating.
And when you're talking about trying to draw in some of these larger companies to provide employment base,
it's
all
vital.
Spins out.
Yeah. No, I think we know that.
I ran my campaign on it.
I should be up front. Go ahead, Brian.
Is there any discussion
in the police department about managing circles in different ways, roundabouts in different ways, such as having speed bumps, things like that. Do you suffer the same problems I do when I get stuck behind an unbreakable line of cars coming to the circle? They won't give you an inch. And you just have to wait until they all get to Earth.
I think you need to bank the outer lane.
Or you need to be from Jersey and you just go when you can go.
Yeah. That was a great infomercial lead.
Because the drivers cooperate with each other and they all get into the circle, but they don't do that.
That's true.
So it seems like we need to be having some kind of
101,
round
about 101.
I'm serious about speeding up the cars that will be metered as to how soon they can get across that bump because they got another chance to get in.
There were interesting quirks about roundabouts. The person that they just on a rational basis would be, I'm in here first, I'm in the outer lane, and someone in the middle lane pulls into you, they have the right of way. Under state law, so there people don't realize that, and I think that it creates some pretty tough situations.
It does. So that's a half-hearted but serious question. Is there any, with roundabouts being in there, being in the area for about 10 years now, is there any work being done to make them better?
Yeah. Well, I can't say. There's been a lot of efforts to try to make the one out off the freeway better, but DOT, I think, didn't nail it. I think they, for a while, made it worse. Mm-hmm. And it's been changed again, and I can't say.
Now there's only one lane entering it.
What are some of the options of making it a more flowing process?
Well, it is a merge, so you know there's got to be a flow of merging.
They don't merge.
Mm-hmm. People don't understand the difference.
Well, I think the problem comes that once the light changes at North Bend Way, mm-hmm. and you're coming down the street, there is no stops unless it's a pedestrian crossing. And so when you have all these streets that flow out onto North Bend Way, they come into that roundabout. And there's just a steady line sometimes that you're going to wait 3-4 minutes.
Yeah.
Really? Some stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. They won't let you.
No way. I go through that intersection 6-8 times a day. If I have to pause for one car.
At 4 o'clock when I take my son to karate and I come around from the west side of town and I go around the roundabout and I make a left turn to go into Sideview Park area, sometimes I will sit and
you're
wait.
Out of the roundabout.
Oh, yeah, yes. That's not the roundabout.
Oh, no, yet. But I'm saying that line of cars goes into the roundabout and creates that steady stream, so it's a steady
but
stream.
But without that roundabout, those cars would be backed up.
You have a swap paint, Gary, you're not doing it right.
So you're just like,
let's go down by east. Take that
back. That's right. I care. So, definitely do.
I know where somebody who cares.
I have two final things. One, congratulations, Brendan. It looks like you have enough votes to securely win and become a council member for the city of North Bend. So congratulations.
Here. Thank you. I'm happy that in a minute. I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Staff, will you kindly send out a request that we will need a new planning commissioner in January?
Well, yeah.
My understanding is that there's already people lining up.
So. I'm sure. The committee is definitely engaged now. So I think we'll
Which
have...
Which was the first objective.
The competition will be stiff in that position. There's lots of people, I'm sure.
They will have a councilman's seat.
With that, does anybody want to make a motion to adjourn?
Make a motion to adjourn, Mr. Chair.
Move it, baby.
Motion by Dick, second by Jim, and all in favor?
Aye.
We are adjourned at 9:29.
Do you want for potatoes and chips out of the meeting order?
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
Yes. I apologize if I was a little bit...